when we do have the zombie apocalypse, you and I are on the planning council.
Yes.
I'll be your vice chair. As long as you don't want me to take the minutes, because I don't do detail.
You have no authority here, Jackie Weaver. No authority at all.
She's just kicked him out. Some respect to your pure authority. Don't make a flex, no do superiority. You're just a speck, and she's got seniority. Jackie Weaver is the authority.
Hello, and welcome to my brand new podcast, Jackie Weaver Has the Authority. Every episode I will be joined by a guest as we have the authority to answer your big unanswered questions, like a couple of agony aunts. If you enjoy this episode, there's already another one out with the lovely Jeremy Vine. So, read the standing orders and have a listen to that too. Today's guest is a former Gogglebox star, host of Pause for Thought on Radio 2, and is an all-round good egg. It's the Reverend Kate Botley. Kate, welcome.
Hello.
And thank you for taking time out of what I know is going to be a really busy schedule for you to spend some time having a chat this morning. So for the couple of people who might be listening that don't know who you are, would you like to introduce yourself?
Well, whoever those people are, my mother is sure to tell them in a Morrison's queue at some point. My mum goes up to random strangers in public and goes, "Do you know who my daughter is?" And it's like, "No, I was just crossing the road. Why are you telling me?" My name is the Reverend Kate Botley. I am a vicar in North Nottinghamshire. But if you recognise me from anywhere, it's probably from Channel 4's Gogglebox, but it's also from MasterChef and Pointless and 8 out of 10 Cats and all sorts of other things that I pop up on. I'm a media vicar, for want of a better word. It's me and Richard Coles, that's the other one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you vicars are getting everywhere at the moment, aren't you?
I mean, it's almost like people have stopped coming to church and we need to get out there.
Well, I don't know. And you didn't mention Dawn French in that group.
No, but we did get together, Dawn and I, recently for Comic Relief and do a little dance to Lizzo's Juice, which was enormous fun. But when you meet people like that, you have to be sort of really careful because... I fangirled really hard, let's just put it that way. I was like, "Who's Dawn French? Hello, Dawn." I actually curtsied and I shook her hand. I was like, "Hello, Miss French." And it was really funny because she bought me a present. She'd bought me one of her books all signed, which was lovely. And I thought, oh, golly, I haven't got a gift. So I ferreted around in my handbag for 5 minutes. And fortunately, I'd got a glow-in-the-dark Virgin Mary in there. So she got that. So okay. I was chuffed to bits to give her that.
So that's the kind of thing that vicars keep in their handbags?
Glow-in-the-dark Virgin Marys, lipstick and hip flasks.
Okay, she might have preferred the latter.
She might have. Mm. Can I just say, I'm going to say it now for all the female reverends and some male reverends, but for all the female reverends who had to chair meetings in rooms like that over the years, we related so hard. I was in a vicar group chat when your moment of glory broke, and we were all the female vicars were messaging each other going, "I've been in this meeting, I've been spoken over by men like that," and we were solidarity sister for strong women of leadership. We were right there with you.
You see, in some ways, I kind of feel that's a bit depressing.
It is. Of course it is.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, you say that you're a woman of a certain age. Oh, my God, I've got 25 years on you. In fact, probably calling on your services any time now.
I'll do you a discount, though.
That's totally put me off what I was going to say.
You were saying that it's quite depressing because actually you think we'd moved on. You would think, wouldn't you, that we'd moved on.
Exact point. And I say, woman of a certain age, quite comfortable in the kind of role that I have in Cheshire. And my experience certainly over the last 20 years is well and truly treated with reasonable respect in most of the things that I do. So I guess the post bag was terrifying. Because it was a real wake-up call for me, realising that wasn't everybody else's experience. I assumed that my experience is everybody else's.
No, and we've come so far. You know, we see it as a mountain. We see inclusion and equality as a mountain. And we think we've come so far. We look back down the mountain, we go, wow, look how far we've come as women. Look at how far we've come as women in leadership. But then suddenly, in moments like that, we look at how far up the mountain we've still got to go.
Yeah, nice way to put it, Kate. Nice way to put it. Look,
I'm going to get in trouble if I don't get through some of these questions.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, let's do questions.
Okay, so some of these questions really are the kind of things that are, in my humble opinion, going to change the world. Okay.
Okay, great. Okay. We love that.
Yeah, they're important.
I love Jackie Weaver changing the world. This is what I like.
So, you have children?
I do, two. Last count.
Sissy from Twitter is asking, do you survive your child's teen years or do you just buy a vineyard for the wine?
I absolutely love teenagers so much better than toddlers. What's the difference between a toddler and a terrorist? You can negotiate with a terrorist. You can't negotiate with a toddler. So, you know that moment when you're parenting toddlers and you put their dinner down on the plate and they go, no, blue plate. And they just don't want the pink plate. They want the blue plate. And for no other reason that that's what they want. And you just, you can't reason with them. Teenagers, opinionated, loud, but that's what I want from my teenager. They are adults with L plates. It's my job to debate with them, to bounce off them, for them to test all those things out on me so that when their L plates are off as adults, they've had a good grounding. And also, Jackie, once they can put themselves to bed and mix you a gin and tonic, you've done it, right? So I love teenagers. I used to be a secondary school teacher. And I'm going to do the inverted commas things. The naughty boys on a Friday afternoon were my favourite class.
Okay, a strange question from David Graham. Have you ever broken down in a brand new car? Now, it's not clear in this whether or not what he means is, you know, kind of like had an emotional meltdown while in a brand new car. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I imagine that people who drive brand new cars and old cars are as likely to have emotional breakdowns, but I don't know.
I've never had a breakdown in a brand new car in terms of the car breaking down. I've had many a breakdown as a person in a brand new car. And the only car I've ever broken down in was a friend of mine's Jag. It was a vintage Jag, and it was like, oh, I'll take you out for a drive. And he was a bit showing off. And we broke down within about 5 minutes of setting off. So I had this whole glamorous afternoon planned of being in a vintage Jag with a man who wasn't my husband. You know, this whole kind of like glamorous afternoon. Let's cause some scandal driving around the streets with me, with my hair blowing. But yeah, it wasn't quite like that. And also, you know, there's that thing, isn't there, in open top cars that you think it's all glamorous. You're going to look like Audrey Hepburn. And actually, when you get out, you look like sort of a Muppet. You look like Animal from the Muppets with your hair. So, you know, manage people's expectations is what I'd say.
My husband, when I first met him, had a little Triumph Spitfire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but except he always used to park next to the curb. So you were always getting out of the car so that you were actually sitting at least parallel to the curb, if not below it, and trying to get out.
The royal family, they used to have lessons about how to get out of the back of a car, didn't they? And the Queen's Bentley, that's been modified so that she can stand up inside it and walk out of the car. So we need those. We need one of those. We need a customised Bentley for you, Jackie. Yeah.
All those years back, I thought I just needed a winch. But yeah, I can't think of... I got a flat tyre once, but don't tell anybody this either.
Okay.
When I had the flat tyre, it was quite inconvenient. And it was only a couple of miles from home. And I thought, well, what's the worst that can happen? Just keep going. It's the only time I've ever known my mild-mannered husband to lose his temper.
It's really bad, isn't it? It's really bad to drive on a flat tyre. Have we got another question?
Why do quality shoe shops insist on the need for measuring kids' feet when the child has different size feet, but then they sell them a matching pair?
These are amazing questions.
I know.
They really are incredible questions. I mean, things I'd never considered. I have no idea, but my favourite story is of my friend Trev, not his real name, but that's what we call him. And his mum, he's an only child, and his mum is a very... She's lovely, but she's very fussy and protective of Trev. Very, very fussy and protective of Trev, which is, as a mother of a son of myself, I am totally down with that. But Trev went to buy some shoes with his mum, and his mum insisted on the assistant measuring Trev's feet. Trev is 26. and his mom made the assistant measure his feet. And so there was this grown-up adult sat in the shoe department.
I'm just worried why Trev is taking his mother shoe shopping with him.
Well, I think because it would be easier to, it's easier to tech her than it is to not, if you know what I mean.
See, I do go shoe shopping with my husband, but that's only because otherwise he goes to the shoe shop three times before he makes up his mind.
Graham's the worst, right? So I will, but I think this is the thing, right? So I will buy shoes, and if they fit well enough,
yep,
I'll wear them.
Yep.
So, you know, and I have Carter bar shoes. I have shoes that are just for wearing in the car and sitting at the bar in the pub. You know, they're not for walking in. I could not outrun a, you know, outrun the zombie apocalypse in them. You know, they're not really for walking. In there for wearing. Graham, if he's trying to buy a pair of shoes, it will take him months and months and months to settle on a pair.
Now, actually, you raise an interesting question there. What is the appropriate footwear
for the zombie apocalypse?
For outrunning the... Now, I'm going to need two different answers here because, as you know, we have two kinds of zombies. We have the fast-moving ones and the slow-moving ones.
Yep. Well, we have. I hope it doesn't surprise you to know that we have full zombie apocalypse plans in our house. Me and my daughter are obsessed by planning for the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
And whenever we go to a new place on holiday, for example, or we go to visit someone's house, the first thing we both do, me and my daughter, is assess where we are and what our best chances of survival would be in the zombie apocalypse.
Of course.
Now, I'm recording this in a room on my own, so I can say to you, Jackie, because I'm presuming it'll go no further than this podcast.
No.
My husband and my son, they're not surviving the zombie apocalypse. We know that. We've already come to an agreement, me and my daughter, that those two, you know, my husband's a thinker. He doesn't have very quick reactions and my son can't run fast. So, you know, we're very sad to say goodbye to them, but their chances of survival are very minimal in the zombie apocalypse. Shoes, it's a flat trainer for me with a good solid sole, because obviously when you're trying to find food and supplies, you need something that's got a nice, thick, robust sole for when you stood on all that broken glass. But the more important question, I think, about what we're wearing for the zombie apocalypse is in the support department. And I think a decent sports bra is going to be the making of us, Jackie.
Can't disagree. And again, I think, you know, if we do share this helpful information, because I think we should share it, is, for God's sake, wear a top. You know, sleeveless just isn't going to work. I mean, you know, the whole point is you don't want them biting you. So, you know, get rid of those bare arms.
And actually, your best bet at zombie apocalypse is to hole up somewhere, isn't it? It's to get yourself... The first thing we're doing is filling the bath full of water because you don't know how long your clean water supply is going to last. So get that bath filled. That's first thing. Plug in, bath filled. We used to do that when the water was turned off when we were kids. You know, every now and again, if the water got turned off, my mum used to send us upstairs to fill the bath. We never actually used the water that was in the bath, but for some reason, my mum thought that that would keep us going. So we're filling the bath, and then we've got an open staircase in our house. So I'm hacksawing the staircase off so that they can't get upstairs. If they're breaking downstairs, they can't get up the stairs, you see. That's what we're doing.
The chairman of the council is the chairman of the council. Chairman of the council is the chairman of the council.
Chairman of the council is the chairman. So on the basis of that last question, this next one is going to be no problem for you at all. Okay. David from Hull, what mythical creature would make the world a better place?
Well, you know, quite clearly you've not seen me on a Sunday morning at R5 because I replicate a zombie like you've never known. David in Hull's question was, what mythical creature would make the world a better place? I'm guessing unicorns would probably make the world a better place. I think the world would be a better place if we had flying horses with spikes on their heads.
You're not worried about the health and safety aspects of that?
No, we'll put a cork on it.
I never thought of that.
Cork on the end.
Yeah.
For safety.
Well, I can see that. I was actually going for dragon myself.
Dragon, fire-breathing dragon, they're good. That's a good one. I'm learning Welsh at the moment, so I'm very down with dragons. I'm trying to learn Welsh at the moment, which is the hardest thing I've done in a long time. I'm only a week in, so I can only ask you, how are you? And I know the word for dragon, which is draig, is the word for dragon. Sutiki.
I did try and learn Spanish, and I was doing quite well on one of those audiobooks for the car.
Yeah.
until I drove straight through a road junction.
Yeah, because you were too busy asking what, which is the way to the shoe store. ¿Dónde está la frutería?
I couldn't get the phrase right, and I was so obsessed with it that I just drove through a road junction.
Did you learn the Spanish for, I'm really sorry, officer, I was learning Spanish?
I got away lightly. No one was hurt, but I realised that that wasn't the place to learn a new language.
No.
This is an interesting one. William Tench keeps procrastinating while trying to write his university dissertation. Do you have any tips for keeping focused?
Yes. There are lots of different types of people in the world, and one of the greatest gifts we can give ourselves is to learn what type of person we are. Now, there are those people who would do like an hour on it every night for a year, and it would all get done in a nice, slow and steady pace. And then there are other people, like me, who wrote my master's dissertation in 3 days. I'd had 2 years to write it, Jackie. It was due in 3 days' time, and I suddenly went, like that. So I spent 3 days getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and working all day until midnight and then going back to bed again, and I got it written in 3 days, and it was fine. We are led to believe that the first of those people that are slow and steady and do a little bit on it every day and work on it, we're led to believe that that's the right way to do it. Not necessarily. Whatever way gets it done for you, you go for it. So I'm an under pressure girl. Unless I know there's a deadline, unless someone's saying to me, if it's not in 3 days, that's it, I won't do it, because I am lazy and telly is really good. In fact, when I went forward for vicar training, my bishop, they write a big report on you. And my bishop wrote this big report about all the education I'd had and all the faith experience I'd had and the breadth of knowledge I'd got. And when he interviewed me, he said, "Now on paper, Kate, you appear very spiritually deep. However," and I was like, "That's me, as deep as a puddle."
I think that's probably not true, but I don't know you well enough.
But I would say to the person who asked that question, I can't remember their name, I've instantly forgotten.
William Tench.
William Tench. I would say to William Tench, who I am now going to call William Tench at all times, with as if it is one word, Jackie Weaver. I would say to William Tench, you just find out who you are and play to your strengths. And don't worry if you don't approach things in the same way as everybody else.
Read the standing orders. Read them and understand them.
Read the standing orders.
Read them and understand them.
Dear me.
Appalling behaviour.
Right, final question. I've got to ask you about Celebrity MasterChef.
Oh.
Because I want to know about
do
that.
Do it. Have they asked you yet?
No.
Jackie Weaver,
I don't know that
do
I can cook.
Do you get called Jackie Weaver as in a whole sentence all at the same time?
Depends. It's like people do refer to me as Jackie Weaver.
Yeah, I'm having to work really hard to call you Jackie and not go Jackie Weaver. Because that's how I, like, it's all one word, isn't it?
Yeah, but I tell you, I've gone off subject again. I'm going to get in trouble.
They'll edit it out, it's fine.
When I first got married, it seems like 100 years ago, I joined a rural community where my first introduction to the rural community was as Nancy Weaver's daughter-in-law.
Yes.
A little bit later, I eventually became Stuart Weaver's wife. And then I became Michael Weaver's mother.
Mom, yep. You see, this is it. This is it. As women, we're defined by the relationships we have with other men. This is it. I mean, this is a whole... Me and you could get on a right feminist rant, Jackie Weaver, about this. I feel it coming.
Well, will you enjoy the end of the story, which is that my husband is now referred to as Jackie Weaver's husband.
Yay! Yeah, that's like my Graham. That's like my Graham. Are you Kate Bartley's husband?
Celebrity MasterChef.
Hi.
What possessed you?
I know. I don't know. I wanted to show off, really, I guess, because I'm a desperate show-off, if you've not already worked it out. I wanted to show off, and my mum really likes it. A lot of the telly I do is because my mum really likes it. I don't know if you heard that Dan Walker stepped down from Football Focused or Match of the Day 2 or something or other. She phoned me up and said, "Are you going to be presenting that? Mum, I'm a vicar. Football is really not my bag." Well, you could do that. You should be doing that, Katie. You know, so my mum, thank the Lord, and I don't take the Lord's name in vain there, but thank the Lord she's not my agent, because she would be pestering everybody. Down, boy.
I think your mum would be a brilliant agent.
And she gets really cross.
And are you a good cook?
I'm all right, yeah. I mean, I got to semi-finals and asked a chef. I'm not bad, but I'm a cook. I'm not a chef. In fact, right now, I've got Mum and Dad coming this afternoon for an outdoor garden thing. I've got a batch of scones about to go in, and I've just done a carrot cake and some homemade soup this morning already.
What's your address?
You'd be welcome anytime.
You see, what confuses me about, you know, not the celebrity MasterChef, but, you know, MasterChef or the Great British Bake Off or something like that, is that, you know, you have these people that are supposed to be on the top of their game or think they're on the top of the game.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're faced with, I don't know, boiling an egg. And it's like, where are the instructions? I don't know how to boil an egg. And then in the next session they do, they're suddenly able to produce, you know, souffle or something like that, you know, something completely, you know, magnificent. And you think, well, that was amazing, because 5 minutes ago you couldn't do anything.
Yeah, well, they do say, apparently some proper, you know, posh restaurants, you know, these kind of like Michelin-style restaurants, one of the first things they do when they get a cook is to ask them to fry an egg. Because right. That, you know, and they say, or poach an
difficult.
Egg. You know, because one of those sorts of things, if you can do that well and with care and with attention, and if you consider frying an egg and, or boiling an egg not beneath you, then that is a good foundation. Our best tea, sometimes the kids will say to me, can we have a really nice tea tonight? And I'll go, yeah, what do you want? Do you want me to do a lasagna? Do you want me to do a curry? Do you want a roast dinner? What do you want? And they go, can we have chicken nuggets and chips from freezer? And they're like, that's like the biggest treat in our house. It's like such a naughty, we call it naughty freezer tea. Naughty freezer tea. Because like it's not cooked. It's like just, you know, you've just put it in an
it's
oven.
Assembled. Yeah. I think everybody deserves an assembled dinner once in a while.
You know, every now and again, there's something about two slices of white sliced bread and some oven chips.
Fish fingers.
Fish finger butty. Oh.
But I do them posh. I have gherkins on there as well.
Yes, I like a gherkin. Yes. I like a gherkin. I don't trust people who don't like gherkins. What's wrong with them? When I went on my German exchange trip when I was 14, I discovered gherkins. This was the first time I discovered gherkins. I was on holiday in Germany with my pen pal. And I took such a liking to gherkins that my packing up my lunch for the way home. So they waved us off at the coach station. And I sat on the coach all the way back to Mary Blighty with just the biggest jar of gherkins and a jar of mayonnaise. I was so popular. I was such a popular child.
I'd say, were you expecting your first child round about there?
Ridiculous. So, like, all these other people had, like, these little sandwiches and things, and I just had the biggest jar of gherkins. Weird kid. Weird grown-up as well. Hurrah for the weirdos.
Kate, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Aren't you a delight, Jackie Weaver?
I really feel we are kindred spirits somewhere. I have got to talk to you at length somewhere else about the zombie apocalypse.
And you keep speaking out in those meetings. And when we do have the zombie apocalypse, you and I are on the planning council.
Yes.
I'll be your vice chair. As long as you don't want me to take the minutes, because I don't do detail.
And there you have it. A lovely natter with the Reverend Kate Botley. Good to know that she'd abandon half her family just to escape the zombie apocalypse. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, read the standing orders and subscribe, as well as leaving a nice review. Apparently it helps. If you want to ask a question for a future episode, you can do so on Twitter, at JackieWeaverPod, or on email, jackie@giddyauntcomedy.com. And if you fancy supporting the show and getting lots of bonus bits, head to patreon.com/JackieWeaverHasTheAuthority. You can also click the link below. That's it for this week, but I'll be back with another episode soon. Bye for now.
She's kicked him out.
Jackie Weaver has the authority. Your time is up. Subscribe and leave a nice review. Follow at JackieWeaverPod on Twitter. Support the show on Patreon. We hope you enjoyed the show.